Good morning, everyone. This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity, a book of prayer demands by Paramahansa Yogananda. And this is number 54. Tune us that we may hear thy voice. Volumes of thy Savior voice resound through the loudspeaker of every loving heart. The voice of thy wisdom roams through the ether of space, seeking everywhere hearts that are tuned to ecstasy. Sadly, the warning sermons pass unheard by souls deafened with the static of sense pleasures. O divine broadcaster, tune our souls, long distracted by the static of our indifference. Fine-tune us with the delicate touch of soul perception. Grant us the privilege of hearing thy magic melodies in the ecstasy of divine awakening. This reading is, it's so familiar to us in some way, not just because we read it every year, but as I was listening right now, and I listened again to Swamiji saying how often Master quoted this passage from the Bible to as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. So when we hear it, it's not only Jesus' words that we're hearing. I just realized this. But it's Master's vibration in it as well, which is why I know some weeks ago, I don't remember when it was, Asha was giving the sermon, and she was sort of like, this is the sermon we all hope we don't have to give each year. She said that. I don't remember which one it was about. This is the sermon we all love to give each year. And I realized it's because it really is imbued with Master's vibration. And although I do feel that who's ever chanting typically does a very lovely job of tuning in and coming up with chants that carry that vibration, I thought Viraj just did such a beautiful job this morning. And then Lahari, as she was leading us into meditation, and she used that word, those words, they were so beautiful. First of all, she talked about the immortal promise in the chant. I thought that was such a beautiful way to speak to it. And then she mentioned our willful dedication to God. It just feels like each person has been uplifted by the vibration of this reading. Because the reading is so familiar to us, I thought yesterday, let me read this and meditate on it and find a different string to pick it up by. Because there's a lot that not only can be said, but that has been said over and over about the reading. Because there's something so obvious in the reading, attune yourself to me, open your heart to me. That's what receiving means. I found this beautiful quote. I don't even know why it came up in the last few days. Well, I do know why, but I don't know what I was looking for when it came up, by a rabbi, Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach. But you'll hear, it's of course a universal quote. He said, "Now, friends, open your hearts." And then he stops and he says, "But what does that mean?" And he answered himself, of course, that was a rhetorical question. And he said, to suspend rational skepticism and be ready to accept the unexpected. It's so beautiful. It really flows, and these readings are very similar from what Asha was talking about last week. She so beautifully spoke about grace, and she really talked about it from that perspective of how grace descends we can be praying for it, but we don't even really know how to call for it. Then we find ourselves in those moments where we know something has happened that we couldn't even have known to ask for. Because in a way, it would be, what happened was beyond that. It was beyond our ability, beyond our ability alone to anticipate the unexpected. And we call that grace. That's what happens. We open our hearts. God enters and takes charge of our life. And that is grace. But what came to me in the reading, or from the reading yesterday, is we say these words a lot, and yet when we want to manifest the true meaning in our life, very much like grace, we can approximate it. We know practices. We know some things to do. But to make it real, to actually say, how can I live this life and create the best possibility for soul receptivity, which is what we're talking about here, which of course leads to grace. That's why I said they're very connected. And there are so many ways, and I wanted to try and share some stories, some wonderful stories, some of which we've heard, some of which we haven't, because what the stories show, the reason for doing this, is that there are so many ways to open our hearts to God. There are so many ways to deepen our attunement, to reach for that guidance, that wisdom. And most of them, all of them, actually, all of them are exactly within our reach, because there's no quantification in what we need to do. There are soul qualities. There are spiritual qualities in our behavior, in our everyday lives, that allow us to increase our soul's receptivity. That's part of what I loved about what Lahari said this morning, when she said the willful dedication to God. It's just willful in the best sense of that word, and it's our dedication moving in the direction of the divine. It's not exactly what we need to attain. It's not how much. It's not how many. It's the willful dedication. It's qualitative. And that's what comes through in each of these stories. The story did come to mind just when I was reading last night, that I believe many of us have heard about a disciple of Swami Sivananda. And when she took initiation from him, this is a true story, he told her that he wanted her to start getting up at 4 o'clock every morning to meditate. Now, of course, we can think, if our guru told us to get up every morning and meditate at 4 in the morning, of course we would do that. I mean, you just think, absolutely. But, you know, getting up at 4 every single morning starts getting harder and harder and harder. So she said that for many mornings, a long time, she did wake up at 4 in the morning, and she would start hearing sandals, wooden sandals on the stone floor, walking towards her door. Then a very soft knock, awakening her, and she would meditate, and she would do long meditations, and they were deep meditations. And then she said she started getting a little lazy about it. She wasn't getting up as readily. And in a very short order, the sandals quit coming, the knocking stopped. It's such a perfect, and she told this story with a lot of humility, but such a perfect story. As long as we're calling to God, as long as we're wanting Him, as long as we're listening, He'll talk. He'll talk to us in, oh, so many ways. As many ways, not only as there are souls calling to Him, but in each moment, the way the soul calls, He will answer. But if we quit speaking, if we quit listening, He just quits talking. He doesn't take His love away. It's not with judgment. It's not the way we behave in the world when people don't do what we would like them to do. Not at all. And it's important that we don't get confused about that. God's energy, His presence, His love, it doesn't go anywhere. It stays there. But we are not drawing it to us anymore. We have free will. I think it was Sister Gyanamata who said, the only decision we ever have to make in life is, will we love God? Will we be moving towards God or not? That's our only decision. But we have that free will, and God will never push us. So as soon as this woman quit listening, God quit talking. The magic went away. But again, it's not judgmental. That brought to mind last night and brings to mind now. Swamiji has told us so often these really funny stories about James Collar, who was one of Swamiji's brother disciples. Master said of him that he had commotion karma because everything he did just led to trouble. And I think we know the stories, but in a way they're worth telling because they show what it can look like in the world, but it's not what it looks like to God. And it's important that we all remember this because then who we are, exactly who we are, exactly what we're doing, if we're doing it with devotion, if we're doing it with willful dedication, God doesn't care what it looks like. James Collar was asked to take away some of the grass that was growing too tall on the grounds of Mount Washington, and he got lazy. He didn't want to get the lawnmower out. So he went around the hills, Swamiji says, just throwing lit matches everywhere. And all of a sudden, the hill was on flame. People looked and noticed it, and fortunately, were able to get the fires out. But who does that? And then there's that wonderful story when they were at Lake Shrine, and Master had a gun. Swamiji says he doesn't know if it was a BB gun or a 22 that somebody had given him. But he was shooting it into the air to scare the duck because he didn't want the duck to eat the fish. And James Collar looked at him one day like, you shouldn't do that to Master. But the next day, he got the gun and he came out and he didn't mean to, but he shot the gun and he killed the duck. I mean, these are the things that happened in his life. But you know, Master said about him, Master said, he will find freedom in this life. He said, Master said about him to Master, he's like hot molasses. He's too hot to swallow and too sticky to spit out. But what he said about James' relationship to God is that he said he will not give up. He wants God. He just will not stop. And because of that, he will find freedom in this life. Long before I ever knew that story, I used to tell people, I just nag God all the time. I nag Him and nag Him and nag Him. When I want something or I want Him or I want to feel Him, I talk to Him incessantly. And the way I can nag, believe me, God Himself knows it. I also know many of you know it. Like many qualities for all of us, it's the best of me and the worst of me. But I always used to say, he's going to give it to me just to get me off his back. And when I read this about James Collar, I thought, I know that. And now for sure, I'm not going to stop. Because again, it's not the quality in it. As long as it's in the direction of God with your heart open, as long as you're wanting God, you can make all the mistakes. What we can't do is forget about him. We can't quit talking. We can't quit listening for his answers, because then he'll just leave. And he'll wait lovingly, patiently. There's a, I can't think the name of it. Somebody's going to help me out, because I spoke about this film piece. What do they call it? A documentary. I'm sorry. The word was just eluding me. I watched a documentary, and for those of you who are part of my secrets class, forgive me, but it's such a perfect story for right now, about a woman whose name was Rochelle Cowan. I say her name because she was very well known throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s here in the United States. She and her husband, Paul, were very well known because they were, in the best sense of the word, activists. They were involved with a lot of the marches around the Vietnam War, around women's rights, around civil rights. He was a very well-known writer for the Village Voice, which at the time, Greenwich Village Voice, these were all big things. And his parents were extremely well-known. His father was the president of CBS, and also both of him and his wife, doing very good work around the world. Anyway, Paul and Rachel got married, and it was a deal at the time. It sounds so silly to say it now, because this is dated only in time, but not in spirit. He was a practicing Jew, and she just didn't even believe in God. But they got married, and they had a beautiful marriage. Actually, they wrote a book on mixed marriages, which got them onto all of the national news. They were there anyway, but very positive, good people. And one day there was a fire in Manhattan, and Paul's parents, who lived up in a penthouse, were both killed. They were not old, that old, but they both died in that fire, and it was devastating, just devastating. And as this documentary on Rochelle's life, because she develops a brain tumor, it's very clear she's going to die, which she has died. There were a lot of people who wanted to capture parts of her life, so they made this documentary. But I want us to feel who this woman was, because it is such a beautiful example of what soul receptivity can look like, another example of what it can look like. When that happened, she started praying. She didn't believe in God, but she started praying, and her prayer was, I can't do this alone. She was found herself talking to God, I can't do this alone. I need help. And from those prayers, she had the inspiration to convert to Judaism, and she became very involved in Judaism. In fact, she ultimately went to rabbinical school and became a rabbi. But that was the first time in her life where she had to open her heart and allow God to enter. And then, in his 40s, Paul developed leukemia and died. And they had, again, a beautiful marriage. They had two children. And she didn't know how she could do it. And she sat there and she said, I knew I needed to pray. I needed to ask for guidance. And she said, I prayed and prayed. And then I started hearing repeatedly, as if a voice kept telling it to me over days, choose life, choose life. What beautiful inspiration came. She became a rabbi. She She started the School of Jewish Meditation. She was just a great soul. And then she had her own brain tumor. And a lot of this documentary is after that. She started meditation groups all over New York. People would come to her as she was dying, just reaching out in her way and in her moment of reaching and listening and deepening and growing. And she was so honest and so real. She would say to whoever was interviewing her, "This is hard. This is a very hard moment in life." She didn't say anything about dying, anything about giving up. Her next words were, "I feel so blessed to have help, to know the way, to have been handed meditation." In this documentary, you see this soul opening, and you see every moment God just taking her hand. She didn't believe in God. She spoke about that often. She had no concept of the divine. And yet, the minute she truly asked, the minute she was ready to say, "I want to open the door to these dark rooms that I'm finding myself in and invite the light in, because the light cannot come in otherwise." But again and again and again, a very, obviously a very creative, a very energetic, a very bright and competent woman, but not in the beginning of her life, deeply spiritual, caring, but not in relationship to the divine in any way, and yet to as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. And that is exactly what Rachel did, just like James Collard was doing it, just like that devotee told her story saying, "God was coming to me and I stopped him." And these aren't the stories of Rajasi or Sister Gyanamata, who we hold. They were such highly evolved saints. But you know, someone once asked Master, how did Rajasi make so much progress so quickly in this life? The Master said he knew how to listen. Very interesting answer. He was listening. He was listening more for that vibration of the divine. He was drawing it in. But that's an important answer for all of us. So many stories. There are more stories. But for right now, let me just talk a little bit about what this means for us. Because I did want to say, I wanted to point out that it's about every soul, every single soul. If we can make an effort to tune into the divine, who is that transmitter between this soul, this little soul, every soul, and cosmic consciousness. And that transmitter comes anew to Earth over and over for us, for every one of us, for exactly where we are, just asking us to be ourselves with our hearts open, to keep living our life, but to remember to call on God as many moments as we possibly can, to invite him in, to remember when we have a question, to take it to God, to take all of our problems. Like Rachel, I can't do this alone. I can't do this alone. I need a bigger container, something bigger than me. Because again, the progress that we're making is often much more progress, spiritually speaking, than we could do on our own. We are getting help. She reached out for that help, and God appeared. And when her husband died, and she said, "What can I do?" God's right there. Choose life. Don't go anywhere. Your husband passed, and that is all of what it is. The pain doesn't leave, but the decision to keep moving in every moment in our life towards God, to keep calling on Him, again, in as many situations as we can. Yes, to try and deepen our meditation. We talk about it all the time, or to bring more energy to it. Because meditation is the place where we internalize energy, where we go to the only place from which we can reach up to God. It is where attunement happens. It's the energy. That's why we always say, open your heart. Why is that, Rabbi Shlomo? You could go to any teacher in any religion. They're not talking about the human heart. They're talking about the heart chakra. So in meditation, we want to come in. We want to internalize these experiences. This is how Rachel knew, ultimately, to open meditation centers, to start teaching meditation. This very great being reached the limit of what she could do on her own. And she was not using these words, but she was developing soul receptivity. She was going to be one of those ones who received him. Master said that we couldn't begin. We wouldn't even think to look for God if there wasn't an avatar, if there weren't those teachings. We need to be shown these things. And all we need to do is to remember to ask this morning in my meditation the words to one of the songs. I think I know them, but it's amazing. You know, you can sing these songs literally hundreds of times, but when you're trying to just say them in words, sometimes it's challenging. But a song that we sing in the oratorio came to me where let me just start myself, and then I will. Yeah. So the song, I don't know the name of it, but it's "Though Fallen Deep in Sin, by Men Abandoned, if longing for His grace, truth be your God." And then it says, the final line is, "Friends, only think of Him. Break ego spell." Isn't that amazing? That here you are, though fallen deep in sin. Swamiji's saying, wherever you are, whoever you are, friend. He calls us friend just after he's said to us, okay, he didn't call us sinners because Swamiji doesn't do that, but fallen in whatever ways we have either fallen or have not yet advanced on our path. Swamiji calls us friend, and he says, only think of him. Break ego's spell. It means start breaking all of those bonds that the ego draws you to. It is so magnetic in the world. Ego's spell is so difficult to get out of. It's so beautifully worded. It has cast a spell on us. We are drawn inexorably out into the world. And then Swamiji says, only think of him. What an extraordinary hope. What a bit of love is coming to us. It takes, really speaking, in this whole world and all what we're aiming for, we're aiming for those moments, maybe everyone's had some, where you're beyond thought, where you're beyond the ego, even if just for moments, where you feel yourself expanding into that larger self. And then, as Swamiji said, as soon as you think that you're meditating, you're no longer meditating. Pretty easy to get out of that place. But that's what we're aiming for. We're always aiming to live more and more in that place of self-realization. In that place where this soul remembers and is expanded into that state of Christ or cosmic consciousness. It's big where we're going, but the path is actually rather simple. That's what the reading says. That's what the song says. That's what Rabbi Shlomo says. That's what every great teacher says. Simple. Because God's on our side. He wants us. He's not a tyrant. He's not grading us. He's not judging us. He's not saying, sorry, not in this life. We're saying that. We can all quit saying it right now. From this moment on, come on, God, just come with me. No matter what I do, even if I'm ashamed of it, I can remember now. You're not. No judgment. You want me to love you. Me. Whoever I am. You're going to accept my love. That is an extraordinary promise. How many teachers have to tell us that? It's the truth. Right now. Right now, truth be your guide. We have to go inside because we need to love God in spirit and in truth. And we can only get there one way. Right now, we're being held captive. We're in body consciousness. But in a moment, we can be loving God in spirit and in truth.
In the other lived by the banks of a stream, a hermit whose prayers chose applause for their theme. He gazed at the flowers and he smiled at the sun. Then he clapped with delight. Lord, he cried, oh, well done. Well done, Lord, oh, very well done. The mountains that lap with the gypsy clouds, the fields smile to welcome the sun. All nature sings praises aloud. The fields smile to welcome the sun. All nature sings praises aloud. The tree stands to show their elation. A day on God's earth has begun, and every true heart in creation in speechless wonder is bowed. And every true heart in creation in speechless wonder is bowed. Well done, Lord, oh, very well done. The joy that you planted in children's hearts, the thrill known in bearing a son, the hope when a trial departs. The thrill known in bearing a son, the hope when a trial departs. The gladness of men in their neighbors, of youth in its victories won. Our joys are the proof of your labors. How wonderful, Lord, are your arts. The joys are the fruit of your labors. How wonderful, Lord, are your arts. Well done, Lord, oh, very well done. At last I've discovered the mystic key. The world's joy, O secretive one, replies to your sweetness in me. The world's joy, most secretive one, replies to your sweetness in me. For here in my heart lies the answer, your love shedding light like the sun. While life seems to leap like a dancer, when gazing I see only thee. All life seems to leap like a dancer, when gazing I see only thee.